Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare! All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
Hey, I'm Diana.
I was going to say I'm Erin, but she beat me to it. Not that she said I'm Erin. She said Diana, but I'm Erin. There you go.
Yay. And we're back with Richard.
Yeah. So this is Richard 2. I mean, it's Richard 3, but it's Richard 3 2. It's Richard 3. It's actually Richard.
Every time I write it down, I'm like, Richard 3, 2,
three,
Richard 3, 1.
1, 2.
1, 2. What? No.
Yes. Richard 3, Act 1, Scene 2. Richard 3, 1, 2.
Episode. Yes, these numbers.
No, but it's episode 2 of Richard 3, but it's Act
it's
1, act one.
Oh, my God. Starting off well.
I haven't even been drinking.
I know. This isn't drunk Shakespeare. Never mind. Wait until we get to Henry VI. Good grief.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
okay.
Dearie, dearie. Yes.
So, here we are.
Here we are. And when we last met our hero. Well, hero.
We were last met our Richard.
Villain, not hero.
Well, our Richard. He's our Richard.
Our Richard. Our Richard. Oh.
He told us what he was going to do.
Yes. What did he say?
He said, if I cannot be a lover, I will prove a villain.
Yes, but first he's going to prove a lover because he says, I'm going to go marry Warwick's.
True. Yeah. Warwick's daughter. Right. Well, he says he's going to pit his brothers against one another. He's going to dispose of George, Duke of Clarence, who's his middle brother, so that then when King Edward dies, he is the natural next person in line. And in the meantime, he's going to go marry Lady Anne.
Yes, Lady Anne, Warwick's youngest daughter. He had two daughters. And Anne, well, the oldest daughter is married to Clarence. So in this play, we're not going to see anything about these. Well, we're going to see a little bit about Clarence's children, but Richard is going to gloss over. This play is going to gloss over Clarence and his children and why they weren't heirs to the crown. It's not, you know, because they just never got it. So it doesn't matter. But Richard.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Richard is going to marry Anne. And because, well, he says he's going to, and by God, he's just going to make it happen. Ain't he?
It's such an interesting, well, okay, so we should just do it and then we should discuss because, yeah. It is interesting.
Interesting. So yeah. She is only in two scenes, lady. Well, three. She appears silently in one scene.
But also, let's remind our lovely listeners about Anne's father and...
Yeah, because she's going to bring it up a bunch. Yeah. So, as we said, she is Warwick's youngest daughter, and she's going to mention him. But the person that she comes in following, she's also going to call father, and that is Henry VI. And he is the king that was just king previous to this play. Mm-hmm. Yep. And his son was her husband. And she had just barely been married. Like, really not. I mean, she's not pregnant. She hasn't had time to do that, really. And Edward, his son, was killed on the battlefield at Tewkesbury.
Right.
In front of his mother. Yes.
Margaret.
Yeah. Who we met. No, who right. We did not meet. We're going to meet.
We talked about Margaret.
Yes. And so Anne, Lady Anne, when we meet her in the scene, she is the only mourner for King Henry VI. She is following his coffin down the street because, as people carrying it.
She married into the Lancaster line.
Yeah.
So Warwick, we talked about Warwick and how he was called the Kingmaker and how he vacillated between Yorks and Lancasters based on who's going to come out on top. And he married, cleverly, his eldest to a York and his youngest
to a Lancaster.
Yeah. So his line was going to be tied to royalty no matter who won.
Yes, but one of his daughters was going to be screwed.
Yeah.
Either way.
Either way, but he didn't care because they were just pawns in his game.
Of course. Making alliances.
Yeah, yep. Making alliances. And, you know, and caused bad blood between the girls, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, if you watch The White Queen, they try to still be friends, but it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So she's coming in as the mourner. And she's going to talk out this whole bit of story a little bit, you know, and talk about what happened to this poor man. It's because it was a tradition when someone died, someone very high up, they would parade them through the streets and they would stop at different points in the streets and tell the story of their death and tell about their virtues and all of the things that made them great. So she is the only one that's out in the street doing that. And so my question is, like, did nobody else care about him?
well, okay. So no, I would say, you know, well, this is just who the hell am I? But I would say that, you know, when the crown moves from one family to the next and there's been a really long war about it, the peasants are not like, oh, I really preferred Henry. They're just like, yeah, okay, whichever's king, I'm going to come out and bow and scrape to the one who's king. And the one who's not king, I don't want to get beheaded for treason.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do that. You know, I have to be careful. And for the lords, etc., the ones that were loyal to Lancaster are probably not really around anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
they're a little shorter than they used to be, shall we say.
By a head.
by a head or so.
and also, you know, I do wonder about Margaret not being present in some way. Not that she loved Henry, because she didn't love him, not at all, and she thought he was a doofus. But he was Ferdinand the Bull.
He was. Yeah. Yes.
He liked to smell the flowers. He was not a particularly good king.
Or strong king.
He was a good man, but not a good king.
Yeah.
So I think people are afraid of the Yorks.
Yeah.
And that's probably wise.
Yes. So, but Anne sort of, at the beginning of the scene, feels maybe like she has nothing left to lose.
Right.
Because she tells you about all that she's lost.
Yeah.
And so she has quite a conversation with Richard, where she talks to him in a way that, A, no woman would ever dare talk to a nobleman. And B, you know, no Lancaster would live after they talked to York in this way. So
maybe she thinks she's dead anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Or she might as well be dead or something. Because, yeah, she doesn't have children either. So she has nothing. So we have to, this is really important to remember, actually, because people often say, how did this happen? But we have to remember the situation for this woman. You will see Richard woo her in his way, and you will see him win her over after she goes into the scene hating his fucking guts.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that he wins her over. That's what I want to talk about after we read it, because, I, we've talked about this in other plays. Women who lose a husband and don't have a family?
Yeah.
They're nobody now.
Right.
Nobody.
Yeah,
they
that's what
nothing.
I was getting at, is that, yeah, she has absolutely nothing to fall back on. Zero. Nothing. She cannot be mistress of her own money.
Nope.
Yeah, it would have been going to her children, but there's nowhere, you know, she's not in control of that fortune. It would go to some man somehow.
Right. And I think that it goes to
the king, probably.
Well, I was going to say, doesn't it go to another Lancaster?
It's Warwick's fortune.
Right. But Warwick is not affiliated with either, but he's married her off.
Well, he's dead.
Right. But he's married her off to the Lancasters.
Yeah.
So Edward Lancaster, married to Anne, would have inherited Warwick's money. And then because there are no sons, it would go to another Lancaster, another like a cousin or a.
Yeah. But Richard is wooing her for her money. So he's pretty sure he's going to get it.
Well, once she marries, right?
Yeah. And I think the king awards him this money afterwards, after they get married. It's actually a source of contention because they're like, wow, Richard just landed himself a really fucking enormous fortune. And he buys up, not buys up, but he takes up many of the castles of the north. So he kind of amasses himself this power up in the north where he could defend himself even if he was not king. And that's all historical interest, perhaps. But, you know, it doesn't really come into play in this play. But I'm just saying.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But so maybe he doesn't win her over. But as we were starting to say, she doesn't have any other choices. And so I think that as she's listening to him talk, there comes a shift where she realizes, you know, this fucking guy just as good as any other fucking guy. And he is a brother to the king. So I would be in a better position being married to him.
I would be safe.
For now. As safe as I was married to that other prince guy. Jesus. Yeah. But it's really interesting. So watch for that, you know, see if we can figure out where that shift happens. It's kind of cool. But their language is very matched. It's really beautiful. They take each other's words and twist them around in meaning and throw them back at each other, which is this fascinating exchange that we're going to get into. Yeah.
Sort of like Angelo and Isabella.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And only these two are not evenly matched.
Yeah. And also they would not be the love couple that Angelo and Isabel might be if they were had been in a different circumstance. Because
well,
it's not
know.
The kind of.
In The White Queen, now, of course, you know, it's a different take on the story, but in The White Queen, Anne is actually in love with Richard when they're younger.
Yeah. Yeah. All these people grew up together, right? So they must have seen each other, you know. So that's kind of a fun little fantasy on the part of Philippa Gregory. Yeah.
Yeah. She's full of fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. But also, if you're reading along or if you take a look at the script, what I'd like you to look at is just look at, you know, squint your eyes and look at the scene on the page because it's really cool. You can really see actually what the exchange looks like without even reading it because you'll see like a big speech and then a bunch of one-liners, two-liners, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then a big speech. So you see where the power kind of transfers and who takes charge. You can just see it on the page. It's really cool. Mm. So shall we?
Let's go.
Yeah. So Aaron's going to be Richard this time. She just made out some kind of an unfortunate face.
I was being a hunchback.
Hunchbacked king.
I made a thing with my mouth. But I'm not, you know. I mean, he had scoliosis. He didn't have he didn't have funny mouth.
No. He was indistinguishably deformed somehow. That nobody talks about.
We don't talk about it.
No.
What hump?
What hump? That's it. Maybe Marty Feldman was based on Richard.
Oh, Lord, oh, Lord. Sorry. That's Young Frankenstein for those of you who don't follow.
And happy Halloween to you.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. So I'm Lady Anne. Enter the corpse of King Henry VI. He's walking. He's a
He's zombie. A zombie.
Oh, happy Halloween no. again.
Yeah.
No. This is a good zombie episode. There you go.
He's in a box.
Set down your honorable load. If honor may be shrouded in a hearse, whilst I a while obsequiously lament the untimely fall of virtuous Lancaster. Okay. Hearse, coffin, Lancaster as a line ending. She's reminding you which side she's on. Okay. Right.
Yep. Untimely fall.
Hmm? Yeah. Untimely fall. He was killed too soon.
Well, he was killed.
Yeah.
As opposed to dying of natural causes.
Natural causes, yes. Yeah. Poor key-cold figure of a holy king, pale ashes of the House of Lancaster, thou bloodless remnant of that royal blood, be it lawful that I invocate thy ghost to hear the lamentations of poor Anne, wife to thy Edward, to thy slaughtered son, stabbed by the selfsame hand that made these wounds. Lo, in these windows that let forth thy life, I pour the helpless balm of my poor eyes. Beautiful. Poor.
All right, so
poor.
Lancaster and Lancaster, two Lancaster line endings.
Yeah, and then yeah. Royal blood, you know, kind of also reinforces that, right?
Right, well, there's four in a row. It's Lancaster king, Lancaster blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, who's the real king? Right here, this dead one. Right? So now she's speaking to the corpse. So they have put him down, these poor guys who are carrying him all around the city. And then she's going to address the corpse itself. All right? I want to call up your ghost, invocate. And I was the wife of your son who was stabbed by the same guy that killed you. Okay?
Yep.
In the windows, the wounds, I'm going to pour my helpless tears, my
balm,
useless
right.
tears.
Yeah. Helpless
because
balm.
They're not going to help you. Balm mm-hmm. usually is something that cures you.
Windows for stab wounds.
Yeah. Windows that's, into your soul.
That's such a beautiful way of saying something so ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cursed be the hand that made these fatal holes. Cursed be the heart that had the heart to do it. Cursed the blood that let this blood from hence. More direful hap betide that hated wretch that makes us wretched by the death of thee than I can wish to adders, spiders, toads, or any creeping venomed thing that lives.
So okay. much repetition.
Yes. Cursing, cursing. We've got heart,
cursing
heart,
three.
Blood, blood. Yeah.
Cursing three times, right?
Three times. Yeah.
yeah.
Sacred cursing.
Sacred cursing.
So she's kind of taking upon herself almost a priest role of like, you know, making almost like this catechism of repeating things that will call down the powers of God to, you know, revenge this poor dead person. More direful hap, more horrible fortune befall that person. She hasn't said his name yet. That person that has made us all wretched. But then she brings in these animal imageries.
Has made us wretched by your death. He
by
killed you
death.
And now we're wretched because he killed
wretched.
You.
Yeah. yeah. So we have all this animal imagery. As we go forward in the play, you're going to notice that so many people refer to Richard by various kinds of animals. So we have poisonous ones here, right? Adders, spiders, toads, all poisonous things. And she brings in the word venom. She's going to go on to curse other things associated with him now. If ever he have child, abortive be it, prodigious and untimely brought to light, whose ugly and unnatural aspect may fright the hopeful mother at the view, and that be heir to his unhappiness. Okay.
Wow. So that's a hell of a curse.
To curse the unborn child.
Yeah.
Abortive, be it. Unnatural. Abortive is unnatural. Prodigious is monstrous. And untimely brought to life. Premature. Who's ugly and unnatural. She repeats that in a different way, right? Might scare the mother as he comes out of her. This was all, you're going to hear it later. This was all exactly what Richard's mother says about him. What his birth was like. So it must have been a story that was circulating that she's not getting this from nowhere. So that will be the heir, his heir, this horrible thing. Curse number two. If ever he have wife, let her be made more miserable by the death of him as I am made by my poor lord and thee. So I hope she's worse off than me.
Yeah, she's more miserable by his death, made more miserable by his death than I am for my husband's death and the death of my king.
Yeah. Come now towards Chertsey with your holy load, taken from Paul's to be interred there. And still, as you are weary of the wait, rest you, whilst I lament King Henry's corse.
Corse is corpse.
Yes. And Chertsey was a church where the kings were buried on the outskirts of London. But taken from Paul's, there's a historical note that says that Henry VI's corpse, when it was brought into St. Paul's Cathedral, actually bled on the altar. And so they thought that was a bad sign and they took him away.
Wait, don't befoul my altar with that guy's blood. Get out of here. Go. That's demon stuff.
That's right. It's a bad sign. Very bad.
That's all. All right. And Gloucester, stay you that bear the corse and set it down.
What black magician conjures up this fiend to stop devoted charitable deeds?
Villains, set down the corse, or by St. Paul, I'll make a corse of him that disobeys.
Yeah, so notice the word corpse. Corse is corpse, repeated a few times here. And then black magician, these are buzzwords for dangerous, dangerous things. Black magician and fiend and conjure, this is all about magic. And, of course, King James would have loved it, but this is not in the time of King James.
No, this is Elizabeth.
This is an early play.
Yeah, and fiend, she's calling Richard a fiend.
Yeah.
That's a biggie to call someone.
That's a dangerous thing to call
right?
a nobleman. Yeah.
Yes, because fiends are demons. That's not, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right out.
Very risky.
So course three times, and then St. Paul.
Yeah. And notice St. Paul, remember last time we said, this is his chosen saint that he likes to swear by. Okay?
Yeah.
And then one of the gentlemen decides he better be brave and speak up. My lord, stand back and let the coffin pass.
Unmannered dog, stand thou when I command. Now, I think he slaps him.
I do, yeah. Unmannered dog, bam,
yep.
Right?
I really think he does.
Yeah, but I love how Richard decides to use that animal imagery against someone else. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of stuff that's always thrown at him, but here's an underling, and he's going to throw that same kind of language at this guy.
Yep. Advance thy halberd higher than my breast, or by St. Paul, I'll strike thee to my foot and spurn upon thee, beggar, for thy boldness. Buh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Halbert is a long axe, and he's like, raise it away from my heart, or else I will kick you with my foot. So we have these wonderful antitheses that are going to start already here. We've got heart versus foot, you know, a higher thing versus lower, and or I'll fucking kick you. And then Lady Anne looks around, as all these men are fading away, and she's like, what? Do you tremble? Are you all afraid? Alas, I blame you not, for you are mortal, and mortal eyes cannot endure the devil. Avaunt, thou dreadful minister of hell! Thou hadst but power over his mortal body. His soul thou canst not have, therefore be gone.
Again, she's calling him devil and minister of hell.
Yeah.
This is, whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
She got nothing to lose. She did, whoop.
Yeah. She's kicking ass. Avaunt is begone. And it's one of those things that priests, you know, like, and you think about in The Exorcist, you know, like, off you go, demon. Right. And then he just turns around with a nice, lovely smile.
Sweet saint, for charity, be not so cursed.
Cursed?
Yeah.
Is shrewish. So he's reminding her that women should not speak like this in public. Certainly not to a nobleman.
But also, cursed reflects back to curse, curse, curse.
Yeah, for sure. Foul devil, for God's sake, hence and trouble us not. So she said, sweet saint. He says, he said, sweet saint. She says, foul devil. So notice he has sort of these beautiful feminine words and she has these hard, angry, combative sort of words. For thou hast made the happy earth thy hell, filled it with cursing cries and deep exclaims. If thou delight to view thy heinous deeds, behold this pattern of thy butcheries. Oh, gentlemen, see, dead Henry's wounds, open their congealed mouths and bleed afresh. So she's kind of, Shakespeare's allowing this moment to happen on stage, which happened, as we said, at St. Paul's Cathedral, or by all reports at the time. So you've made earth, hell, and filled it with the, you know, cries and exclamations. And if you want to see what, you know, your beautiful deeds have brought us, look at this thing, right? The pattern is the example. So the example of your butchery. And then she unveils him and she's like, oh my God, his wounds are bleeding.
Yeah, open their congealed mouths.
Yeah, they're
bleed
congealed.
Afresh. But also she says cursing again, filled it with cursing cries. So there's a lot of that in here. Okay.
Blush, blush, thou lump of foul deformity, for 'tis thy presence that exhales this blood from cold and empty veins where no blood dwells. Thy deed, inhuman and unnatural, provokes this deluge most unnatural. Got unnatural twice. Yeah.
Line endings, right.
Yeah. And lump of foul deformity, referring to his shape. This is a phrase that's going to be repeated again later by Queen Margaret as well. Inhuman, he's like an animal, right? He's not a human being. And 'tis thy presence that exhales this blood. That was one of these myths that dead people would bleed afresh in front of the person that killed them, if the person that killed them walk into the room. And then she's going to call down God. Yeah. O God, which this blood madest, revenge his death. O earth, which this blood drinkst, revenge his death. So she's starting this cool tension between heaven and earth. And she's standing there like the conduit between those two things. She's calling down heaven. She's begging earth to, you know, swallow him. Margaret is again going to repeat this exact same kind of imagery in Act 4. We're going to see it again. So
and
this
it's very
is
priest.
The,
it's very priest-like.
Yeah. And it's also sort of the only recourse for women. They don't have any, they're not going to like whip out a sword and strike someone down. So wishing for God's help or the other side, you know, the demons underneath to do something about it. And Elizabethans absolutely believed that the human body was the tension conduit between heaven and hell. Either heaven with lightning strike the murderer dead, or earth gape open wide and eat him quick, as thou dost swallow up this good king's blood, which his hell-governed arm hath butchered. Nice.
Hell-governed.
Hell-governed.
And Gloucester, lady, you know no rules of charity, which renders good for bad, blessings for curses.
Yes. What does the church tell us to do when we've been wrong?
Forgive.
Yes. Villain, thou knowest no law of God nor man. No beast so fierce but knows some touch of pity. famous line.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like there's no beast that's so awful but experiences some kind of pity from someone. And he really turns this line around, which is great.
That I know none, and therefore am no beast.
No one pities me, so I must not be a beast. Nice. Really nice way to use his deformity, you know, outwardly, rather than, you know, be attacked by it. Yeah,
right.
It's great. Oh, wonderful when devils tell the truth.
More wonderful when angels are so angry. Vouchsafe divine perfection of a woman of these supposed crimes to give me leave by circumstance, but to acquit myself.
Isn't that beautiful antithesis, right? Devils, angels, truth, anger, yeah. And then divine perfection, and she's going to turn his words around now. vouchsafe diffused infection of a man of these known evils, but to give me leave by circumstance to accuse thy cursed self.
Fairer than tongue can name thee, let me have some patient leisure to excuse myself.
Fouler than heart can think thee, thou canst make no excuse current but to hang thyself.
By such despair I should accuse myself.
And by despairing shouldst thou stand excused for doing worthy vengeance on thyself, which didst unworthy slaughter upon others. Wonderful. So let's take it back a little bit. Yeah. Diffused infection. So we had divine perfection, and then she's like, and, you know, muddied in and infection, right? Horrible disease of a man. Mm-hmm. And he was asking for a little time to be able to explain himself,
yeah,
right?
Make an
and
argument.
She's like, no, I'm only giving you time to curse yourself.
Curse again.
Yeah. And patient leisure. He's like asking, like, reasonable, be patient, mm-hmm. be reasonable. And she said, the only excuse you can make is to go hang yourself. And he's like, if I hung myself, then I would look guilty. And she's like, no, if you hung yourself is the only way that I could excuse you, because then you would be gone.
Yeah.
Because you did all these things.
And Gloucester, say that I slew them not.
Why, then they are not dead, but dead they are, and devilish slave by thee.
I did not kill your husband.
Why, then he is alive.
Nay, he is dead, and slain by Edward's hand.
In thy foul throat thou liest. Queen Margaret saw thy murderous falchion smoking in his blood, the which thou once didst bend against her breast, but that thy brothers beat aside the point.
I was provoked by her slanderous tongue, which laid their guilt upon my guiltless shoulders.
Thou wast provoked by thy bloody mind, which never dreamt on aught but butcheries. Didst thou not kill this king?
I grant ye.
Dost grant me, hedgehog? Then God grant me too. Thou mayest be damned for that wicked deed. Oh, he was gentle, mild, and virtuous.
The better for the king of heaven that hath him.
He is in heaven, where thou shalt never come.
Let him thank me that hope to send him thither, for he was fitter for that place than earth. And you know what? I mean, if you believe in heaven, and we know that Henry VI was Ferdinand the Bull, he might be better in heaven than on this earth being king. Just saying. It's not a bad argument.
No. Explain what you mean by Ferdinand the Bull, in case people don't know.
Oh. Well, so, okay. I hope you guys read that book. If you didn't read that book, go read it. It's a beautiful book.
Even if you're a teenager, go read it right now.
Go read it right now. It's a beautiful book. So the idea is that Ferdinand is raised on a farm, and he just loves to go out to the cork tree and sit underneath it and smell the flowers. And one day the bullfighter scouts come around, and on that day he happened to sit on a bee who stung him, and he bounced and he bucked and he ran around like crazy. And they were like, oh, he's perfect for the bullfighting ring. We're going to take him. So they took him away from his mother and his home, and they put him in a cart, and they took him to, I guess, Madrid. I don't know. And to the city. And so when at his first fight, his first bullfight, they put him out in the ring, and all the, you know, the guys that come and like stab the bull to try and make him angry before the matador comes with his flag, you know, they come out, but all Ferdinand can do is smell. All the beautiful ladies have flowers in their hair for the bullfight, and so all he does is stand there and smell the flowers, and they poke at him and they prod him, and the matador comes and he flings his red cape trying to, and Ferdinand just stands there smelling. So finally they take him back to his farm, which is lovely, and then he can just spend the rest of his life smelling the flowers. But my point is that Henry VI is a poet. He's not a soldier.
Yeah. So he's very ineffectual at, you know, getting anything done like that, but he just doesn't believe in violence and stuff. He doesn't want all of that.
Yeah.
So he was definitely like that. And Anne is right about his gentle, mild, and virtuous. And he was more about praying than he was about politics. So Richard is right that he's like, you know, he always wanted to go to heaven his whole life. So, you know, he should just thank me.
Yeah. And then Anne's like, but, you know, you were seen
with your falcon, which is your sword, smoking in his blood, steaming, covered in red blood, which you were then going to turn against Margaret as well, except your brother stopped you. And he's like, that's because she pissed me off. she was trying to say that I killed Edward, and it was my brothers who did that. And she's like, no, I'm not fucking buying your story. And she's like, didn't you kill this king? And he's like, yeah, okay, yeah.
I did.
And then we've got Hedgehog, another animal. Then we're getting to something interesting right here now, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let him thank me. Want to go from there again?
Let him thank me that hope to send him thither, for he was fitter for that place than earth.
And thou unfit for any place but hell.
Yes, one place else, if you will hear me name it.
Some dungeon.
Your bedchamber.
Ill rest betide the chamber where thou liest.
So will it, madam, till I lie with you.
I hope so.
I know so. But, gentle Lady Anne, to leave this keen encounter of our wits and fall somewhere into a slower method is not the causer of the timeless deaths of these Plantagenets, Henry and Edward, as blameful as the executioner.
Great. So we have this wonderful one shared line there, right? Mm. Some dungeon, your bedchamber. Beautiful. So is it it's almost like, I mean, that's a real force into a different tack, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like
it starts when she says, and thou unfit for any place but hell. Yes. Because what does hell mean?
Hell is slang for vagina.
Exactly. And so he picks that up and off he goes with
it. He's like, actually, there's a particular vagina that I would be interested in, if you don't mind.
Right. I'm going to tell you.
Since you brought it up. Yeah, and then we have this weird fragment of line. I hope so. She's like, you know, she doesn't know what to do with that at all.
Yeah, well, ill rest betide the chamber where thou liest.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, it will, until I'm fucking you.
Yeah.
And she says, I hope so, but she doesn't mean to, she doesn't hope that he's fucking her. She hopes that ill rest betide the chamber where he lies.
Yeah, that's why I think she's a little, like, cut short. Like, I don't know what to say. But then...
And he says it's a keen encounter of our wits. The parlay, right? The it's like sword work between the two of them. Yeah. And they are being both witty.
Yeah. He's enjoying
taking each other a lot. Yeah.
Yes. Fall into a slower method. Let's slow it down a little bit here, baby. Right. Yeah. But he means a calmer discussion. And so now he's going to take a different, you know, like tack. And he's like, you know, there was something else that caused these deaths that is not about me. But he brings in the fact that Henry and Edward were also Plantagenets, like he is.
Exactly.
So he's saying there's a family name here that links us.
Yeah.
Okay. And is not the causer as blameful as the executioner. So the cause, right?
Yep.
And Lady Anne. Thou art the cause and most accursed effect.
Your beauty was the cause of that effect. Your beauty, which did haunt me in my sleep, to undertake the death of all the world, so I might live 1 hour in your sweet bosom.
Nice word to end on there. She ended with hell, he ended with bosom.
Yeah.
If I thought that I'd tell thee, homicide, these nails should rend that beauty from my cheeks.
These eyes could not endure that beauty's wreck. You should not blemish it if I stood by. As all the world is cheered by the sun, so I by that. It is my day, my life.
Black night o'ershade thy day, and death thy life.
Curse not thyself, fair creature, thou art both.
I were to be revenged on thee.
It is a quarrel most unnatural, to be revenged on him that loveth you.
It is a quarrel just and reasonable, to be revenged on him that slew my husband.
He that bereft thee, lady, of thy husband, did it to help thee to a better husband.
Nice. We've got husband, 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 three times, line endings.
Yep.
Right? So, yes, now that you've brought that up, what we're talking about now is your next husband.
Right.
Beautiful. His better doth not breathe upon the earth.
He lives that loves thee better than he could.
Name him.
Plantagenet.
Why, that was he.
The selfsame name, but one of better nature.
Where is he?
Here. Why dost thou spit at me?
Good. So oftentimes the editors will put in the stage direction, she spitteth at him. We
she
don't
spitteth.
Need your fucking stage direction.
First of all, spitteth?
Yeah.
Come on
break.
Now. Come spitteth. On now. Spitteth.
Yeah. But he asks a second later, why are you spitting at me? We don't need the fucking stage direction. Be a moron not to figure that out.
Right. Oh, let's go back because she calls him homicide. She doesn't mean killed. She means killer.
Killer. Murderer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These nails should rend my beard, rip and tear, right? And I would not stand by and let you do that to yourself. And but he's like, because you are the world is cheered by the sun and me by you. You are my sun, my day, my life. Yeah. He's mm-hmm. really going over the top with his imagined poetry here.
But it is lovely what he's saying to her. I mean, it's awful yeah. in the context. But if someone who you were interested in spoke to you like this, you'd be like, oh.
Right. So that's why I'm saying, you know, he is actually speaking the words of a lover.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, and we have to believe him on some level.
Well, I think he does think she's pretty.
Yeah. And maybe has wanted to be able to speak these kind of words to some woman. So he's giving them a try here.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a villain. He is seriously flawed.
Yeah.
So he is trying to manipulate her. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
He is trying to manipulate her to his purposes. But I do believe that you're onto something when you say he's always wanted to speak the words of a lover, but he's never been given the opportunity.
No.
And so now he's pulling them out in maybe not the best circumstance, but
right.
pulling them out.
Well, it's almost like he's setting himself up to fail. Like, he should absolutely fail in this scenario, right?
He should, yes.
So it's almost like he's giving himself the most extreme, insane, scenario in which to practice this. Like, he's like, well, I'm going to fuck it up anyway. I'm gonna fail anyway. So I might as well, like, go out in glory. Right.
You know, this is maybe a paper or an essay idea.
Like, why her?
Why? Yeah. Well, we know why her. But like, if supported by the text.
Yeah.
What is happening to each of them in this scene?
Yeah.
Support it by the rhythm, support it by the alliteration, support it by the repetition and the line endings. What is happening to each of them as this scene progresses?
Yeah. And then, you know, his better, like, husband, we have husband, husband, husband. So now that we're talking about husbands, his better does not, no husband could be better than him, this other guy that I just had. But which is crazy because she barely had him for very, very long at all. And then
But she's doing the right thing. She's doing the right thing. Because that's what women were supposed to do, right?
Yeah,
they were supposed to respect their husbands almost above all else except for God. And so, you know, husband, king, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her husband would have been king when Henry died, you know, if all had gone according to plan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And, but these are all, it's interesting because they're all pronouns. They're not even names. His better doth not read. He lives that loves thee better than he could.
Mm-hmm.
Name him. And then the name he gives him is the name that ties him to her other husband, Plantagenet.
Right, because they're of the same family.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
It's just that the lines, the sons
Edward III, they're
of
all
Edward III,
yeah.
They're all Plantagenets, but they went different ways and there were arguments over the line of succession.
Yeah. And they were given different titles as the sons of a king are given. So the Duke of York, the Duke of Lancaster, and then it became divided into the Yorks and the Lancasters going for the same thing, going for the crown. But they're all Plantagenets.
So he's
and so,
so how
that's
smart
why she's
is
like,
he?
Yeah. And she uses the pronoun again because why that was he. He was a Plantagenet. And he's like, so am I, by the way. Yeah. Where's he here? And then she spits, why are you spitting at me?
Spitteth. And he doesn't say, why dost thou spitteth at me?
No.
So why the fuck do the editors put in spitteth as opposed
to
spit?
Fucketh annoyingeth.
It's like they're like, oh, people won't understand unless we put the oath on there because it's Shakespeare. No wonder people hate Shakespeare because you could just say she spit at him. She spits at him. Ugh, God, I hate them. Okay, done. That was a little rant.
Why did you spit at me? Would it were mortal poison for thy sake. Mortal meaning deadly.
Yeah. Never came poison from so sweet a place.
Never hung poison on a fouler toad. Out of my sight, thou dost infect mine eyes.
Thine eyes, sweet lady, have infected mine.
Yeah. And in a way, it's true for both of them, in a way. Like, I think she's seeing him in a different light. Like, wait a minute, what? You know, suddenly, not
Oh, you think this is the turning point?
No, not yet. But, like, just for him to even be able to say, hey, here's an idea. What if I was your husband? Like, must make her look at him different. What? What? Right? Yeah. So, in fact, yeah, but different ways. But, like, I think he's making an impression that he didn't make before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Would they were basilisks to strike thee dead.
Basilisks are, like, serpent-y things?
Yeah, like in Harry Potter. That kill with a look.
Okay.
So he says, your eyes have infected mine, and I wish my eyes were basilisk eyes that turned you into stone.
Oh, like Medusa's snakes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Gorgon snakes? Okay. I would they were that I might die at once, for now they kill me with a living death. Those eyes of thine from mine have drawn salt tears, shamed their aspects with store of childish drops. These eyes that never shed remorseful tear. No, when my father York and Edward wept to hear the piteous moan that Rutland made, when black-faced Clifford shook his sword at him, nor when thy warlike father, like a child, told the sad story of my father's death, and 20 times made pause to sob and weep, that all the standers-by had wet their cheeks like trees bedashed with rain in that sad time. My manly eyes did scorn and humbly tear. humbly tear.
Since you stopped there.
Yeah.
So he's making all of these cases for when he never cried ever before. but they're really interesting cases, right? So these eyes of mine never shed a remorseful tear when...
Well, they have shed salt tears for you.
Just now.
Right?
Yeah, now.
Because they're killing me with a living death. Those eyes of thine from mine have drawn salt tears.
Yeah, just now.
Shamed their aspects with store of childish drops.
Yes. So they have shamed the appearance of my eyes with this shininess of tears. And these eyes have never cried. So not when my father and my brother wept over my youngest brother. That's Rutland.
Rutland.
When black-faced Clifford, that is the guy who killed him, the knight who killed him. And so in a way, he's also reminding her, we have both lost people in this war unfairly. My brother was killed on the battlefield. He was a young, very young man and you know, not a really a soldier. And Clifford killed him. And then not when thy warlike father.
Not only did Clifford kill him, but he doused the handkerchief in Rutland's blood.
And then showed it to his father while they were ready to kill him.
They were ready to kill him.
Yeah. And so then, and Warwick told that story of his father being killed, and Warwick was weeping, and everybody else who was listening to the story was weeping, but I wasn't weeping. And Richard was, in fact, the chief mourner at his father's funeral, as we might have said in the last episode. Yeah. So he was very, very much attached to his father. He's saying that he didn't cry for his father. He didn't cry for his youngest brother, but he is crying now. But I think he's also using these examples really, really well, effectively, to say, look, we are both victims here. That's what he's trying to make the equation. Mm-hmm. We're both victims of this horrible, long, drawn-out, awful war that has taken people on all sides.
Yep.
Yep.
I also think that in this moment, I mean, maybe I'm reading into it. There's nothing to support it in the text, but I feel like he shifts in this moment too.
Yeah.
He softens in this moment toward her. Yeah. He's no longer using seduction and innuendo. He's talking real pain. He's being vulnerable in front of her. And something shifts in him.
Yeah. And it's truth and stuff that he's talking here, you know? And when you speak your truth to someone, you look very different to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what these sorrows could not thence exhale, thy beauty hath, and made them blind with weeping. I never sued to friend nor enemy. My tongue could never learn sweet smoothing word. But now thy beauty is proposed my fee. My proud heart sues and prompts my tongue to speak.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. So I never sued. I never asked anything from a friend nor an enemy. I never asked for favors. My tongue never learned how to flatter. Smoothing word is flatter. But now that your beauty is my proposed fee, potentially my prize, now I would do anything. My proud heart sues. I'm asking. I'm begging. I'm asking for things. And this is what my tongue is saying.
Teach not thy lips such scorn, for they were made for kissing, lady, not for such contempt. If thy revengeful heart cannot forgive, lo, here I lend thee this sharp-pointed sword, which if thou please to hide in this true bosom, and let the soul forth that adoreth thee, I lay it naked to the deadly stroke and humbly beg the death upon my knee. So he gives her his sword. He pulls open his clothing and he gets down on one knee and he says, kill me.
Go ahead, kill me. If you can, it's a big if. If you are not the kind of person that can forgive. So, yeah, as Aaron said, I mean, he's making himself not only vulnerable emotionally now he's making himself vulnerable physically.
Yep.
For somebody with, you know, various deformities, perhaps scoliosis, perhaps whatever, for him to get down on his knee is probably a big deal. It's also he's humbling. He says the word humble. He's humbling himself in front of her. these are stage directions, right? So you absolutely have to use them. But then we also have the return of the body parts, like in poetry. We have lips, we have kissing, we have heart, we have bosom, we have naked. These are all beautiful, suggestive words as well. So there's this tradition called a blazon, which was a love poem in which the lover unpacked the beloved in all of her parts and like praise every bit of her parts, right? Like her breasts are two beautiful globes and her eyes are like suns. So this is kind of the tradition of what he's doing here. Yeah.
It makes me think of Bugs Bunny. Yes. Tell me about my eyes.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
And then here again, we don't need the stage direction because we have him say, nay, do not pause. We can see that she's like, he's given me a sword. First of all, women don't get swords. Giving me a sword. What do I do with it? Holy shit. She probably doesn't know really how to hold it, perhaps, properly.
Yeah, well, she wouldn't have been taught.
No.
Nay, do not pause, for I did kill King Henry. But 'twas thy beauty that provoked me. Nay, now dispatch, 'twas I that stabbed young Edward, but 'twas thy heavenly face that set me on. Take up the sword again, or take up me.
Again, embedded stage direction, she must have dropped it for him to say, take it up. We don't need the editor to write in. She drops the sword. Yeah. That's up to the actor and directors to figure out what happens there. Amazing, though. He's like, yep, I killed King Edward. Kill me. But it was your fault. Yep, I killed Edward. You know, I killed King Henry. Yep. I mean, I think this is an incredible turning point, this whole speech. The vulnerability, the admissions of guilt, you know, but then the complicity. Like, we're all in this. Yes. This war has been involved everybody in some way or another. Your father used you as a pawn. You're part of it. You cannot divest yourself from what has happened to bring us to this moment.
Yep.
Yeah. Well. Arise, dissembler. Though I wish thy death, I would not be thy executioner.
Then bid me kill myself, and I will do it.
I have already.
Tush! That was in thy rage. Speak it again, and even with the word, that hand which for thy love did kill thy love shall for thy love kill a far truer love. To both their deaths thou shalt be accessory.
You'll be responsible for the death of both of the people that loved you the most.
Yep.
Because it was your beauty that drove me to kill him, and then you'll kill me, or I'll kill myself.
I've always taken it that this was a convenient thing for him to tell her, because he didn't kill Edward to get Anne, although it might have been in the back of his mind, but he killed Edward for a number of reasons. So I always sort of took it that he was using this, but now that I'm putting the words in my mouth, because I've never been Richard before, it seems to me that he is being vulnerable, and yes, he may be putting lip gloss on the pig a little bit, but I do think he is looking at her now in a different way. I mean, I think when he said, I'm going to go marry Warwick's daughter, I don't think he planned on doing any of this.
No,
I don't
of
think
course not.
This happened. He looked at her and he was like, oh, hello.
Yes. Again, great point. We always have to remember that, too. It is not premeditated. It's premeditated only in that he said, I'm going to marry her. He doesn't know how that's all going to happen. And it is absolutely dependent on what she says, too.
right?
So he's got to convince her in some way. And so she says, I'm not going to kill you. I can't be your executioner.
Even though you're a liar, I won't kill you.
Yeah. Now comes a really interesting little section right here. There is this whole section of 6-beat lines. Very interesting. Does that mean they're thinking? God, I fucking hope not. I think it's just that they're rapid firing this weird, uncomfortable rhythm.
I was going to say, where else have we seen sixes? Because sevens is magic speak, right?
Sevens is magic speak. So I think these are just fragments.
But
or they're pros.
Weren't we talking? But they're all sixes, so they're not. It's purposeful.
It's purposeful.
Weren't we talking about in like, what play were we? Oh, it was the Duke.
It was the Duke,
in Measure for Measure. He didn't have sevens and he didn't have eights in that speech. He had what? Fives?
He had sevens and eights. So he had like two lines and it added up to 15 kind of thing, which is really
weird. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, when I was doing my research about that, I read something about hymns.
Right.
And I can't remember what the rhythm of a hymn is.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it was sixes.
No, I think it's eight.
Okay.
I just sang, praise God from whom all blessings flow. but in any case, anytime that Shakespeare messes with the regular rhythm, you just want to go, hey, whoa, why is that?
Whether this is useful or not, here you go. What is the effect of trimeter in poetry? Why do writers use trimeter? Writers use this metrical pattern as they use others to create a regular beat in a poem. This is especially useful when a writer wants their lines to come off as sounding formal or artistic. Often, a meter is also useful to emphasize certain parts of the poem. So make of that what you will.
So let's see, after we read it, what do we think? What was the effect of this, okay? But I think they're pretty rapid fire. What I definitely don't think it is, I would I knew thy heart.
Beat. Although I do think, I do believe, to both their deaths, thou shalt be accessory. There, I think it's possible there are two beats. But so before the I would I knew thy heart.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
but I don't think that he waits to answer.
No. Not at all. But why? So she goes to a place of uncertainty. She's been very certain up until now, but all of a sudden it's like.
All of a sudden she's a little lost here. She's like, I'm out of my depth. I wish I knew
if you were telling the truth or lying to me. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what's going on. But she doubts herself in terms of the reception, what she's heard. I would I knew thy heart.
'Tis figured in my tongue.
I fear me both are false.
Then never was man true.
Well, put up your sword.
Say then, my peace is made.
That shall you know hereafter.
But shall I live in hope?
All men, I hope, live so.
Vouchsafe to wear this ring.
To take is not to give.
Look how my ring encompasseth thy finger. Even so thy breast encloseth my poor heart. Wear both of them, for both of them are thine.
Okay. And if that wait a minute. What did he just do?
He put a ring on it.
I put a ring on it.
If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
I guess so. He likes it.
He does like it.
Oh my God. But also, I love this. To take is not to give. She's like, so she takes it, but I'm not giving my heart.
And I'm not giving my yes.
Right.
It's not
uncomfortable.
Right. It's not a what's the word? Motherfucker.
It's not
an exuberant. It's not an exuberant yes. But that's not the one I want, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. So we've got the heart, tongue, it starts with body parts that are echoing his speech from above. Mm. And we get to, hey, why don't you wear this ring? And she's like, ibby.
And I think he puts it right on her. He doesn't ask her. Right, he just takes her hand and puts it on her.
Yeah. and then look how it circles your finger. Isn't that nice? But encompasseth is also like this verb of sort of taking over. Mm. Right? So he has owned this event now. It's done. It's finished.
Yeah, he could have said circles, but that's not the same thing as encompasseth. And it's not easy to say. Right. So you know when he says it, he's saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really a verb that they use for encircling the globe, for instance. Like, this is about a verb for taking over the whole thing, the whole fucking thing. Yeah. All right, Glasser.
Colonialism.
Take us home. Yeah, it's colonialism. I've colonized this woman.
Okay. And if thy poor devoted suppliant may but beg one favor at thy gracious hand, thou dost confirm his happiness forever.
What is it? She's not even eloquent anymore. She's like what? What? What do you want?
That it would please thee leave these sad designs to him that hath more cause to be a mourner, and presently repair to Crosby Place, where, after I have solemnly interred at Chertsey Monastery this noble king, and wet his grave with my repentant tears, I will, with all expedient duty, see you. For divers unknown reasons, I beseech you, grant me this boon.
So what did he ask her for?
He said, please leave here, go to my house, let me bury the king and have privacy to cry over him with my repentant tears. And then I will hurry back to see you.
Yeah. So let me take over this terrible job for you.
Yeah.
I will be the mourner because I have more reason to be that because I'm the one that killed him.
Yep.
And now, so she's like, whoa. With all my heart, and much it joys me too, to see you are become so penitent. So now she's like almost like, oh, wow. Like, I feel that for a moment here, she thinks maybe I didn't see him properly before, you know?
Yeah, I think it's very easy for people to play this in a non-complex way. Either she's angry or she's in love with him or whatever. But I think you're right. I think it's very complex what's happening to her. She didn't expect him to put a ring on it. She didn't expect him to call her beautiful. She didn't expect him to say he was... He was repenting for what he had done, and please let me, because she's been walking for a long time now, standing around and giving these speeches, and he's like, no, let me, honey, let me do it for you. Let me take this burden from you.
Yeah.
And I think she's like, when she says with all my heart, I don't think it's like, with all my heart. I think it's like, shock and awe.
Yeah. I completely did not expect to be here right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just, wow.
And she really does, when she says, and much it joys me too, it's...
Yeah, it's what a relief it is, right?
Yes.
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 Huge relief to not be so angry. It's a huge relief not to be so angry.
And also to not have to do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also to know that she's not going to be cast out, and to like, it's just every
right
relief
security
that she
came to her
possibly have.
Yep,
is there.
And then this one funny, Trestle and Berkeley, go along with me. Who are these guys?
The ones that
some
are
of those people on the stage, right?
Bid me farewell.
'Tis more than you deserve. But since you teach me how to flatter you, imagine I have said farewell already. That's a funny thing. She's like, not so fast. I don't think I can kiss you quite yet.
Yeah, right. So I think he's like going in for it, right?
Yeah, and she's like, no.
Imagine I already kissed you.
Yeah.
And outie I go.
Yeah. Out. Bye-bye.
Sirs, take up the course.
Towards Chertsey, noble lord?
No, to Whitefriars. There attend my coming.
Yeah, so that was a Carmelite priory. So it was completely a different place. We're going to bury King Henry where nobody knows where he is.
Yeah. So this is why I think, you know, people go, oh, it was all just a ruse to get... But I'm not... I don't believe it.
But I think, yeah, I think he only makes that decision then after she's left the room.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I don't think that's premeditated either. He's just like, Trinity, nah, let's bury him somewhere else.
Yeah. We don't want people thinking of him as a king because he's a Lancaster.
Right. We want them to forget that whole era.
So go bury him someplace else.
Yeah.
Was ever woman in this humor wooed? Was ever woman in this humor won? I'll have her, but I will not keep her long. What? I that killed her husband and his father, to take her in her heart's extremest hate, with curses in her mouth, tears in her eyes, the bleeding witness of her hatred by, having God, her conscience, and these bars against me, and I nothing to back my suit at all, but the plain devil in dissembling looks, and yet to win her? All the world to nothing! Ha!
I love that, ha, huh? Because it's like one syllable out of a line. And yes, you could stick it onto the end of the last line, but if you leave it by itself there, he could just like build up to that ha and be like, fucking A, you know, a little victory dance.
Yeah. And I think so it is because funny. He cannot believe what just happened.
Yeah.
He can't
believe
he's
as fucking surprised as anyone else, right?
He's like, I mean.
Those are real questions at the beginning. He's like, did you fucking see that?
Many times people play this as if he's premeditated this whole thing, and it's like ha ha ha.
Yeah, like he was sure it was going to come out this way. He absolutely wasn't. No,
and he's like, she
yeah, she fucking hated me when we were going into this, you know. And I got nothing. I came in with nothing but the devil.
And the bleeding corpse was right there. Still, she had everything, every reason to hate me. And yet,
holy fuck.
I think this might be the moment when he realizes that he can really do this.
Yeah.
Because
if I can do this.
Right.
I can do anything.
Something happened. She did spit on him, but then she left the ring on the finger.
And she didn't stab me.
I can do this.
Yeah. And he goes on to like really explore it too in pieces, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Here.
Hath she forgot already that brave Prince Edward, her lord, whom I some 3 months since stabbed in my angry mood at Tewkesbury? A sweeter and lovelier gentleman, framed in the prodigality of nature, young, valiant, wise, and no doubt right royal. The spacious world cannot again afford, and will she yet base her eyes on me, that cropped the golden prime of this sweet prince, and made her widow to a woeful bed.
He's like pulling it apart. Like, wait a minute.
Somehow she forgot
Edward, you know?
Because he was sweet and lovely and wise and valiant and royal. He admits he's royal.
Yeah. But I like the no doubt right royal because there might be some doubt because Queen Margaret had a very famous affair with the Duke of Suffolk. So he's bringing that into, you know, maybe he's royal. Well, we'll see. Prodigality, his youth. He cropped the golden prime. I cut him off in his youth and made her a widow. How could she forget all that?
On me, who's all not equals Edward's moiety. On me, that halt and am unshapen thus. My dukedom to a beggarly denier. I do mistake my person all this while. See, yeah. I think that's where he's like, I can do this.
Yeah. I didn't think enough of myself earlier.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, denier, denier.
Denier. Yeah, denier is like a French, right?
Yeah.
It's a small copper coin. So he's like, my dukedom in comparison to the tiniest copper coin. Clearly, you know, I wasn't comparing my high self to the best things enough.
Right, because my everything, my whole inheritance is not even half of Edward's.
Yeah. Everything. And my whole body and my whole self, my whole character is not half of what he was. Right. I halt, I limp, I'm unshapen, misshapen, deformed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, fuck, I've obviously misunderstood myself.
Yes. Upon my life. She finds, although I cannot, myself to be a marvelous proper man. Albeit charges for a looking glass, and entertain some score of two tailors to study fashions to adorn my body. Since I am crept in favor with myself, I will maintain it with some little cost.
So looking glass, he mentioned mirror in the very first speech. So that's a thing, because it's also it's a theme thing. It's also about seeing and reflecting, you know, how he is seen by others and reflected off of the eyes of others, you know, to back to himself. So this is absolutely a scene about he looking into somebody else's eyes and getting a new picture of himself back.
Yeah.
Really cool. He's a lover.
He's a lover.
Against all odds. Right?
Yeah, right.
And since I'm crept in favor with myself, now that I like myself, I think I'll dress myself up.
Yeah.
I'll have a bunch of tailors come and learn how to make clothes for this body.
Yeah, so I look my best.
Yes.
And she finds me to be a marvelous proper man. She sees me as a man.
Yeah. Nobody else did, ever.
Yeah. And now I don't have to avoid looking in the mirror either.
Right.
Because
I'm going to see like she sees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But first, I'll turn yon fellow in his grave and then return lamenting to my love. Shine out, fair sun, till I have bought a glass, that I may see my shadow as I pass.
Yeah. Another reference to mirrors, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I love this. First, I'll turn yon fellow in his grave. I'm going to bury him upside down. Oh, my God. That's so horrible. That's absolutely awful. You only did that to, like, murderers and thieves and stuff.
And then I'll come crying back to her.
And then I'll return. Yeah, I love turn and return. Yep. Shine out, fair sun, so I can see my shadow.
As I walk past. Because now I'm a fine fellow.
Mm-hmm. Damn, I look good.
I love him.
I know. He's so great. He's so great. Yeah. So that was two out of, or a couple out of the original soliloquies that Shakespeare leaves us alone with him. And we really got a good sense of his character by this point.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. The most unlikeliest of wooing scenes. Pretty much.
Yeah. I am convinced that neither of them saw this coming, and that it is not an ugly scene. It only gets ugly when he says, "Nah, don't bury him there. Bury him there." And I'm gonna bury him upside down.
Right, bury him upside down. It gets ugly when she leaves the room, but when she's in it, it's quite an incredible match of the two.
But also after she leaves, and he's like, "Oh my God." It's self-discovery.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then he laughs to himself. He's like,
Did that work? Did that even work? Yeah. And that wonderful complicity with the audience where he's like, are we seeing the same thing? Are you, did you, can you guys tell me what just happened here? You know?
Yeah.
Very real questions. Yeah. Lovely. So much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beautiful vulnerability too, that he shows there. And
yeah, we see him as a person as opposed to a villain.
Yeah. Taking a big, big fucking risk. Yeah. And now he's one of the richest men in the country when he marries her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his brother's getting a little nervous, you know? If Edward was to continue as king, he would definitely be getting a little nervous there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he thinks, for now, he thinks Richard is on his side.
Yeah.
Richard has shown him no reason to doubt him. He's fought valiantly in his behalf.
For him, yep. And in fact, Richard doesn't do anything to hasten Edward's demise. Edward's demise is just about Edward.
Yep.
Yeah.
Correct. But he knows it's coming. He knows it's coming because the doctors have said it's coming.
Yeah. And we'll see that happen too.
Yeah.
Onward to the rest of this royal crazy family next time.
I love them.
Okay. Okay.
I'm
Diana.
This is Fox Shakespeare.
It's a Fox Shakespeare.
What?
Yes,
fuck?
Darling.
Fox Shakespeare.
It's so nice to do a little fucking of Shakespeare with you.
Okay, my darling. Bye.
Okay, ciao.
Ta-ta.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.